Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and joining me here at the round table, I welcome all members of Florida Youth Shine, Jessica Overstreet. Jessica is a junior at the University of Central Florida. She enjoys spending time with friends and family.
Hi, thank you so much.
Look forward to talking with you. Christopher Ramos. Christopher is a junior in Monarch High School. He enjoys music and friends.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having us.
Yes. Yogan Robinson. Yogan is a 12th grader senior at Bayshore High School, and he's dually enrolled at Manatee Technical College. His thing is cars and computers.
Wonderful to be here, man.
Okay. And Deidre Barfield. She is from Minnesota, and she is a mentor. Her work is, she's a YMCA. She works at the YMCA in Sarasota with Safe Children, and she just enjoys being with youth, right?
Yes. Thank you for this opportunity.
Well, and Brandon Jennings. Brandon is a sophomore junior at Florida Western State College. Advertising, music, technology, these are all his things.
Yes, ma'am. It's a pleasure and it's a blessing to be here. Thank you so much.
Well, I look forward to talking with all of you. I'm really glad to have you. Florida Youth Shine, Striving High for Independence and Empowerment, is a youth-run organization with representation from across the state. Membership is composed of teens and young adults between the ages of 13 and 24 who are current or former foster youth in the Florida child welfare system. Their mission as advocates is to empower, improve, educate, and support the growth of tomorrow's leaders through the combined knowledge and experience of today's youth and supporters. Their goal is to share their stories and experiences in order to create an understanding and improve the system of care for their brothers and sisters currently in care or those who are about to enter care. I welcome all of you to 411 Team. Good to see you again, okay? Florida Youth Shine, can you talk about how it evolved, just the whole group itself? Organization?
Yes. So basically, we had so many problems throughout the state with foster care, and a group of, I would say, professionals around the state with attorneys and caseworkers really saw the problems that were going on, and they created Florida Children's First, which pretty much had people volunteering and making sure that these kids weren't going through all these problems. They were advocating for us. As well as they realized that the best thing that they needed was the voice of the youth. So that's when Florida Youth Shine was created, which has all of us in here, and it has the youth's voice, and that's the most important part, so that way we have their stories and testimonials and knowing that the best person who really speak about it are the youth.
Okay. And you mentioned that there were so many problems and issues that were going on. Can you share some of the kinds of problems or issues that the youth were confronted with?
Yes, we were having enormously problems where we weren't able to go to our friend's house. We weren't able to go to prom. We weren't able to be in sports because we didn't have the proper resources to get there because the foster parents weren't providing transportation. So we created the normalcy law, which made sure that all of us were treated normally. And we had the same opportunities that other kids have that are fortunate enough to stay with their parents, as well as a tuition waiver, which basically says that it's not our fault that we were taken away from our parents, and now we don't have anyone to even help us with college. So now we're granted, thankfully, free college as long as we go to a public university or college in the state of Florida. We could stay until we're 28, so we could get our master's, we could get our PhD if we wanted to, so that way we have the same opportunities and we could be just as successful as anybody else out there in the state.
Let me just add here, the normalcy law extends foster care, you said, up until what, 20?
21.
Okay. However, youth today still have many obstacles. What would you identify as some of the obstacles now? I mean, I know normalcy is still an issue, right?
Yes, definitely. Okay. Okay. I think the biggest thing is the implementation of it and just making sure that the providers around the state are making sure that they're implementing it and making sure that we're treated as normally as possible.
Okay. All right. You're nodding your head. You would like to add? Feel free.
I definitely come from a standpoint as a mentor with Florida U Shine and working in the child welfare field for about 6 years now. Mm-hmm. So it is very important to listen to our youth. Not only in foster care, but all over. So it's an opportunity for me to learn from them and to bring this back to my community-based agency so that we can help make these changes.
How do you express that need? Because even though you recognize it, many don't.
Right.
Okay. And I mean, what have you found that works, or as you think about it? What do you emphasize when you are encouraging folks to just listen?
Supporting the youth. Always attending the quarterly meetings throughout the state. I actually did case management for 5 years, as I stated, going to court for them, advocating for them, and giving them that opportunity, talking to the judges, talking to the guardian ad litem program, and even the senior management of my CBC, which is my community-based agency.
What keeps you from being stressed out? Because it's a very difficult, trying, arduous, sometimes thankless, okay? And, you know, position that you take. Okay.
This is true. This is true. Very stressful. There are times where, you know, I have made friends within the field. And, you know, we get around, we talk, we vent. And so that's helpful to just have that confident friend and confide in them. So I think in learning from other case managers throughout the state and how they deal with certain issues and stress. In this field.
Now, all of you are either currently in foster care or have been in foster care, right?
Yes.
I will just start and go around the table. But, Logan, would you share as much as you are comfortable with your experiences that you have had? And I asked you to share because I know that individuals, people who are listening, really don't have an appreciation for what happens in foster care. They don't understand how kids get there, and they don't understand what you go through being there. They don't understand the kind of restrictions, you know, that you may have. So if you would share, as much as you are comfortable, your story with the listening audience.
Okay, well, I was first placed into foster care in around August of last year, and that was after I was taken from my home in Palmetto from neglect from my parents. And I resided with my aunt for about a month and a half over the course of the rest of the summer, and unfortunately, she didn't have room for me because she was also housing my little sister at the time. So I was relocated first to an emergency shelter in the Minnesota area, and from there, I stayed about 2 weeks until they found an alternative placement for me, which is my current residence, which is a group home in Bradenton.
When you think about that experience, because you went from one, two, three different places, right?
Right.
Home to aunt to then emergency care and then your current place.
Yes, ma'am.
How are you feeling?
Well, it takes the roots out from under you, if I could describe it as any way. You lose the sensation that you can put yourself down in a place for a time and, you know, build up an understanding of your area and friends and relations and all of that. You sort of cut yourself away from it because you lose those opportunities when you're moved at that frequency.
Did you find that your academics or any other aspect of your just life was impacted by that?
Well, academics is one of the few things that actually remained static during the whole ordeal. I had been given an opportunity at the time to participate in dual enrollment at Manatee Technical College, and I had learned from that in Palmetto, and that was the one thing that I could carry with me through every one of my placements was that opportunity. Now, being from a lower class home, you know, opportunities for free college admission, that's something. So that's the one thing that I had to hold on through that entire ordeal, and thankfully, that's where I ended up.
Okay. And I see you nodding your head, Brandon, like you can connect with everything
that he was saying.
Share your experience with us.
All right. So from the beginning, I was taken away from my biological parents at birth because, you know, my mother, she was a drug addict. Mm-hmm. So then I got adopted. Okay. So I got adopted at the age of 2, and that lasted until the age of 10 because she was severely abusive. So from the age of 10 until I aged out of the system, which is 18, I resided into foster care. So my experience throughout with the foster care system has been very rocky because just as Logan stated, I mean, you know, you're never really, you can never, you know, when you plant something, you know, that's when the roots are able to grow deep into the earth. And that means that it's really hard for you to just be able to move it whenever you see fit. Mm-hmm. But us being foster children, you know, it was kind of as, you know, we were just, you know, just being passed around, you know, it's kind of when everyone, you know, when your foster parents, whenever, you know, they see that you start to act out and you start going against the grain, just even the slightest bit, you know, and you start challenging their thoughts and ideas, they're ready to go ahead
and
kick you to
the curb. Which is what you would be doing and is expected to be doing.
Exactly.
It's normal. I mean,
you
it's
know,
not right.
Exactly. You know, and that was the whole purpose, you know, and that hence why I decided to join Florida Youth Shine, because here I am advocating, because when I was in foster care, I would want someone to advocate for me. So now here I am advocating for the children that are now in care and the children that will currently, you know, that will make their way in, because as stated, there are some injustices in the system that should be known and should be brought to everyone's attention. And though, you know, at that time with me being so young, I always felt that my thoughts and ideas were always on the back burner. Mm-hmm. You know, but here I am putting myself, you know, out there on the public eye so that the children would never have to go through what I went through.
How did you cope with what you were going through?
You know,
because you're a dynamic young man.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Nobody would never know that. I mean,
right.
So there's got to be something really special and something that I'm sure that you can share.
Mm-hmm.
Because those who follow you are going to go through similar, mm-hmm. you know, experiences. It's not going to change. You know, like we always say, you know, in our day, your day is just like our day. You know what I mean?
Yes, ma'am.
It's the same. The same types of obstacles that you may have 20 years ago, they're there. They may be manifested in a different way. I'm going to ask you to hold your thoughts.
Of course.
Ken is giving me the evil eye, which means that it's time for me to take a break. You're tuned into 411 Teen. We'll return shortly. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and I have folks from Florida Youth Shine. I had to interrupt you, Brandon, but now you may continue. Sharon, you know, just what it was that you were able to cope with, you know, such a difficult period in your life for a long time, from 10 to 18, mm-hmm. you said? Yeah.
Yes, ma'am. It was very rocky, and I have to say, I'm glad that there was a such thing as music. Because, and there's such a diverse type of, you know, there's so many different types of music out there. And, you know, you can listen to a fast song, you can listen to a slow song that will always be able to match your mood. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that I inherited. I was able to appreciate the music because nowadays I always felt that, you know, people just, they don't listen to it, they just hear a nice beat. But me, I listen to the words and I let it connect with my life, you know, and then that's where it kind of went from listening to music to started picking up a pen and writing down my ideas. And now here I am, masterful with a pen. You know, whether it's me being a poet or me writing lyrics or me just simply telling a story, I learned that, you know, being able to take your ideas and letting them, instead of letting them harbor in your mind, mm-hmm. and just sit there and stay up there, you might as well just take it and put it down. And see, for me, it was one of two things. I could either
use it as sort of a journal or a diary, if you will. And I could, you know, and over the time, I can go back and read it. Or whenever it was something that was very toxic in my mind, I will go ahead and write it down, get it out of my system, and rip the page out and throw it away because now I'm done with the situation. And I feel like that right there is what helped me to be able to cope with society, and especially with my situation that I was going through.
So it was really therapeutic.
Very, very much so.
That music, and I know music is one of your mm-hmm. interests that you mm-hmm. listen. That music was your therapy.
Yes, ma'am, it was.
For coping and dealing.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's fantastic. And yes, ma'am, Jessica. Glad to have you.
Thank you.
Good to see you again. Share with us again.
Yes. So I was fortunate to have my grandfather. He's the one who raised me my whole life until I was about 10. And I actually never even heard about foster care until then. Like, I watched Annie and everything like that. Mm-hmm. But that's the most I ever got of, like, the foster care system. I had my sister and everything was great. Sadly, he did pass away when I was 10 and I had to move in with my mom. And my mom just suffered from just mental and some other forms of abuse that was just a little bit hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I bounced around between my mom and my dad. But the biggest thing is I had my sister during that. I was always the one who took care of her. And I was the one who always made sure, you know, everything got done. And even though she was quite younger than I was, we had an amazing relationship. And I always turned to her for anything I needed. When I was 14, I was separated from her. I went to foster care and she moved in with her biological mom to another state. And that just broke my heart because not only was I going through such a terrible time of getting placed somewhere I didn't even know. I didn't even have my sister and no one ever like helped me try to find her. It wasn't until I turned 18 that I actually got to talk to her again. So it was 4 years of just a whole bunch of miscommunication. And now, like, looking back on it, it was definitely the worst times of my life. Even though I was able to go to school and I had, like, normal day lives, it was always so hard because I would see my friends go tell them, like, their sisters about everything, and I'm wondering where mine is. Wow. So it was just, like, and I would always talk to my caseworkers about it, and they would never do anything, or they would just make up an excuse. Or once she did move back to Florida when I was 16, it took me almost 6 months to realize she was actually back here, and that was through MySpace at the time. But yeah, so it was just always so hard. There was always excuses on why I couldn't see her or why I couldn't talk to her, and it just always broke my heart. And now that I'm 22 now and she's almost 16, she's a teenager, and we're trying to work out our relationship because there's all those missed years. But one, she's a teenager and she wants to do things with her friends, and I can't blame mm-hmm. her because I can't be like, hey, little sister, you're gonna go hang out with me, because she wants to go to the mall with her friends. But it's hard because I want to gain a relationship with her, and I know she wants to too, but she's trying to live her life now, and I feel like sometimes I'm not part of her life because of all those times I missed out on her. So that's why I do Florida Youth Shine, just because I don't want anyone to feel like, one, that they don't have their sibling, and two, to kind of enlighten the community about foster care. Like, I never knew about it until I was in that situation. And I feel like if more people knew about it, then a lot of these stories wouldn't be happening, because there would be more advocates out there trying to help.
What would you share to someone? What kind of advice would you offer to some of those who may be going through similar types of struggles that you went through? How did you persevere?
It was definitely really hard. I'm a really guarded person. I tend to let things boil up until it finally, like, crashes down. It took me quite a while just to even realize that I was in foster care. And I was always so embarrassed because of the stigma that came with it. So I would never tell any of my friends. And whenever they would ask, why is there so many kids living in your home? I'm like, oh, they're just coming to visit forever. And there's always a whole mm-hmm. bunch of different kids. So finally, it just took me finally realizing until I was, like, almost 16 that I'm important and I need to tell. So I finally told my friends. And thankfully, when I was 17, I was placed into my last foster home, which I was adopted by. So then I was able to open up to my adopted parents, because I think the hardest part was I never really felt a connection with a lot of my other foster parents, or if I was in a temporary home or wherever I was, just never felt that connection. So it wasn't until I went and actually, like, grew a relationship with my now adoptive mom, and I was able to talk to her about it. And just let it loose and don't be afraid to tell people about what your situation is, because at the end of the day, it's not your fault what happened.
Right.
And I would always tend to just make it my fault. So talking to other people is what really helped. And also, too, just finding things you enjoy. I found Florida Youth Shine when I was 17. I was thankfully introduced by a mentor with it, and I can never thank her enough for bringing me here. I've been here for about like 6 years now. Mm-hmm. For the last 4 years, I've been the statewide fundraising chair. And it's just, it's given me so many opportunities. I've been able to travel around the world. I've been to D.C. Maybe the U.S. But I've been to D.C. I've been to Washington. I've been to Tennessee. I've been to so many places. And all the people here, they're family. I've met so many amazing people. Like, even the people around the room, some of them I just met a couple days ago. And I feel like they're way more in my life than what, sadly, my sister was. So mm-hmm. I kind of, see them mm-hmm. as family. And just, you know, as I get older and I start to see my life kind of venture out as I go into, the hospitality world, because that's where I want to go, I know I can always turn to them for mm-hmm. whatever. So knowing that you can find family no matter where you are, no matter if it's your biological or not, they're going to be there for you no matter where you are.
Okay. Now, Christopher, would you share your experiences? Are they similar to those that have already been shared? But what were the circumstances with you being in foster care?
Well, to begin with, when I was first taken into the system, that was roughly 3 years ago now, soon to be four. Mm-hmm. And it was a result of a culmination of events. I was in a household that had substance abuse, poor mental health, and many other poor conditions were present. Mm-hmm. And one day just culminated all at once, and just a catastrophic event took place within my household, and as a result, my sister was then taken into the mental ward. 2 days later, the sheriff came by, and I thought I thought it was just going to be a normal event. At this point, it did become routine. It became common for to see the police officers in my local area. I'd say about once a month, maybe. And instead, what happened is they packed me a bag, and I was.
How did you respond? You weren't anticipating that at all.
No, it comes completely from left field. It just absolutely untelegraphed. Mm-hmm. Matter-of-factly, I'd say most youths don't even realize exactly what's happening until they arrive at the shelter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And even once you do arrive, there's still no further indication of what happens from here on. You don't. They'll bring you to a temporary shelter, but they don't really explain to the youths.
How are you feeling at that time? How are the youths? What are you experiencing?
I know for myself personally, I would say it was a very strong mix of anger and confusion.
Mm-hmm.
And would you all agree?
Oh, very much so.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because even if whatever home you came from isn't necessarily satisfactory, at the end of the day, it's a familiar environment.
Mm-hmm.
And after the normal temporary shelter, I was taken into a group home. It was a group home in the Fort Lauderdale area. And I wasn't there for the longest time, fortunately, but this group home it wasn't a particularly nice place to stay and pack your bags.
For our listening audience, would you make the distinction between a group home and foster care? Because I think a lot of people really may not know. They may not be familiar with it. So can you kind
of... Of course. I understand. There's common confusion of... to exactly where youth go.
Mm-hmm.
And most individuals assume that when a child is taken in to the child welfare system, that they go into a foster home. But to my knowledge, this is not what occurs majority of the time. Instead, there are a series of group homes across the United States. And in here, normally how it is structured, you will have a series of different staff who are essentially paid to watch the youth. Often there will be shift workers who come in for 2 hours a day. In my particular group home, we have two staff who rotate throughout the week. So one will stay for around 4 days, the other one for the weekend or so. And this is the majority of this is where the majority of youth go to.
Mm-hmm.
And often they're unsatisfactory, such as the placement that I was in. My placement, there wasn't exactly... ironically enough, because often the youth were almost completely unmonitored.
Mm.
It was very clearly understaffed much at the time. I'd say that for the whole home, there are about four staff, but many of them seemed idle at time or just indifferent. And this is a pattern.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very obvious pattern, that most of the time these staff are just observing the youth but not really maintaining them.
Mm-hmm.
And not really... overlooking any of their...
just kind of custodial care.
Precisely.
Mm-hmm. I throw this out to all of you. How did you feel being in foster care?
Me personally, I was embarrassed. You know, as stated, you know, I was, you know, all I knew was like living with my adopted family and everything like this. And as Chris mentioned, the first place that you are placed is in a group home, because foster homes, you know, which is more of a, you would think, you know, if you're living in a group home and if someone comes from a foster home, you would think that they were more privileged because everyone wants to get into a home rather than living in a group home. Because in my sense, a group home is more sense. It's like a more of a. It's like a more of like a Salvation Army type thing, you know, like, you know, when you get like a halfway house kind of thing, you know, and it's like, and that's exactly the way it is. You know, you have your shift workers and everything like that. So just imagine with me being only 10, 11 years old and I don't have, you know, designer clothes and everything like that, that everybody has brand new sneakers and, you know, Reeboks at the time was the, you know, was the hot things. And here you are wearing Walmart shoes that cost $9.11. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. It's like, you know, and then you go out and then you have to pretend like everything is okay. And then you have these friends that you go with and they're like, hey, can I come and stay the night at your house? And then you're like, you know, well, unfortunately, you can't. You have to sit up here. And then the thing about it, you become so good at lying about your life, you know, that it's like, you know, that's when it starts, you know, you start using your defense mechanisms with being so, you know, telling the same lie over and over and over again that you don't even know that you're actually telling a lie. It starts becoming the truth, you know. And so for me, it was just plain out embarrassing, you know, living in a group home. They have like this huge van, you know, and then it's like, you know, when they take you to school, you know, and it's just you and the staff, you know, they would wear these huge yellow shirts that identified with big black bold letters on the back that said staff. You know, so, it, you know, and then when people see you, you would have to be like, oh, you know, I was with, you know, my mom took me to her work and, you know, that's where she works at. So, you know, she was busy. So she had someone else, you know, so you had to come up with all of these lies to back up a lie, to back up a lie. You know what I'm saying? So it was just the moral of the story, just really embarrassing, just really embarrassing.
Did you have the same types of feelings or experiences?
Well, starting from the shelter, I can definitely agree on your conclusion of anger and confusion, because at the time I had a lot of misconceptions about group homes and foster care in general myself, because it's really a system that you know nothing about until you get into it. You start learning everything from the moment it begins to affect you, and that's how it affected me. So, for example, you read on my interest list, it includes cars and computers.
Yes.
Now, as a requirement to be able to go to Manatee Tech, I had to be able to do online assignments for one of my classes, and that requires a computer. But at the emergency shelter where I was first taken to, youth weren't allowed any form of electronics in the bag whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And now, mind you, I have a case, a suitcase that is chock full of a computer equipment, keyboards, mice. So imagine the embarrassment I felt whenever I was toting, you know, maybe 40 pounds worth of computer equipment back out to my case manager's car because I couldn't have any of that in there. And on top of that, there's the extra worry of, you know, how am I going to get this class? And, well, in the end of that,
it just piles on.
Yeah. And in the end of that, that's ultimately what expedited my process into getting into a group home, because they were looking for a place that would fill that requirement for letting me have my own computer. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, within about a week and a half, they found a spot. So, yeah.
Now, all of you are advocates now.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
How did you move to that role? I mean, how did you get to a point where you felt like you needed to advocate for, you know, foster care? You needed to educate and you needed to empower, because that's what we're talking about. Those around you.
Well, as stated, you know, as I said, you know, I feel that when I was in care, I was always wanting people to go out and be able to speak for me, because, you know, I would go back and I would tell my case manager, you know, and I mean, you could sit up there and talk until you're blue in the face, you know, but when you don't see or feel the change in your own backyard, that says a lot. So that's when I was presented the Florida Youth Shine. I was actually working at a bank, and then once I got out of work, I went to an independent living meeting. And that's where I met my current mentor, and her name is Irvine, and she's wonderful, an amazing woman, and she's so passionate. She has the same drive that I have, even though she's never even been affected by the foster care system. And so it's just a blessing for her to be my mentor. But, you know, she was conducting the meeting or whatnot, and she was giving some insight and giving some background of Florida Youth Shine. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. when I, you know, with me working at the bank and me paying attention and everything, it definitely spoke to me, and it said, you know what, Brandon, this is your opportunity mm-hmm. to tell your story and at the same time change the system. You know, so it all starts with an idea, and that's exactly what Florida Youth Shine stood for. It was simply an idea, and then now look at us now. You know, and that's basically what it is. And we're passing bills. We're passing normalcy, the normalcy bill, which is now a law, mm-hmm. you know. And then now here we are for Children's Week, basically doing the same thing. So, you know, we might have accomplished a lot, you know, but at the same time, the fight is nowhere close to done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You have comments you would like to share with us, Jessica?
Yeah, I think I was probably around 16 and my mentor started coming to me telling me I should go to these meetings. But I was a normal teenager, so I was like, no. And I also think... and I also think, too, when you're, like, a lot of people always forget that we're normal teenagers, too. Yeah. And we also have the same attitudes and the when you just feel like no one knows you and you're all alone. So I was going through that stage where I just felt like no one knew what I was going through and I was just completely alone. And, you know, I was going through not only, like, not having my sister, but also just trying to cope that I didn't have my grandfather anymore, that I just felt like no one was there. And then I just...
Let me ask you something, and I pose this question to all of you, because you all have mentioned, you know, about feeling kind of at fault. Did you feel at any point, we're going to take a break, but did you feel at any point that you were the cause, it was your fault that you were in this situation?
Yeah.
That's good, because often you do feel like you're, you know, if I hadn't done X, Y, and Z. But hold your thoughts. You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. And did you know when minor children or young people are removed from their biological or other custodial adults by state authority, they are placed with temporary parents or foster parents? Join me here today, I have folks from Florida Youth Shine. I'd like to welcome again Jessica Overstreet, Christopher Ramos, Logan Robinson, Deidre is not, she's a mentor, Barfield, and Brandon Jennings. Before we went on break, and we even got to the advocacy part, but we're just going to answer this one question, and then we're going to get into your advocacy. You talked about whether you felt like you were at fault or that you had any responsibility in your situation. I say this because I know this is a common feeling or emotion that folks who are in foster care or group homes feel. And I just wanted to know, if you've had that feeling, how you coped with it and what you did. And I'll just start with you and move around. If you didn't have it, we'll move on to the next one.
All right. Well, along with the whole point of which I was first moved into the shelter, the mixture of anger and confusion just mm-hmm. – it led my mind down just a completely negative path for basically the whole time I was there. I didn't really know how to cope with my situation other than just roll on the hopes that something better is going to come along, because at that point I didn't know what my future was for that. And I felt like it was my fault at that point because I had no other reasoning in my mind. Mm-hmm. You know, before my entire relocation, my mom had warned me just about every time that the police had come to our house to not say what had actually happened due to the risk of us being taken away.
Mm-hmm.
And you start to think about that whenever you're first relocated, and sometimes you might just get to the mental point of which you start thinking that they were right, which is not the case, but it just goes to show you how much those emotions can skew your train of thought.
Mm-hmm. As stated, in the sense when I got taken away, I never really thought that I was at fault, because at the end of the day, I was never at fault, mm-hmm. because it
Good
was,
for you.
You know. But then at the same time, the way that I was treated while being in care, sometimes that can start to thwart your thought process, mm-hmm. you know. And as stated, I feel that sometimes it goes from you being treated as a victim, and then there's times that you start to feel as if you were more the perpetrator.
Okay.
You know, as stated, you know, here you are, you know, being in foster care, and you would think that everyone has your best interest at heart. But for some people, it's not that way. For some people, it's simply a 9-to-5, and once it hits 5 o'clock, they're done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they
it's
turn the phones off. Exactly. You know, and as I said, you know, with me being taken away from my parents or whatever, that you know, my comfort zone, and then here I am basically jumping into the deep end of the pool and being expected to know how to swim. You know, it's very. You know, I still to this day, I don't really even know the correct word of the feeling of how I felt mm-hmm. being in the whole process. As stated, the only word that comes close to comparison is confusion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because as stated, you know, I felt that, you know, with my mother being so abusive in the way that she was, I've covered for her, you
uh-huh.
know, and I covered for her time and time and time again. And then that's where, you know, her not being the smart one to realizing that we were covering, because, you know, with being abused, there comes bruises, you know, and she would want us to go to school every single day and never miss a day. She would want us to make perfect grades and everything like
mm-hmm.
that. You make a B, you're in trouble, you know. And so with me never missing a day of school, and with her beating me the night before, you know, it would... You know, I would go to school and it would raise red flags. And then eventually to the point, you know, I would go to the same school for however many years, and me telling the same lie over and over again. That's when it came to. And then, you know, I had to say what I had to say, you know. So still to this day, I don't think that I was at fault at all.
Okay. Well, we need to talk about your advocacy. Because I'm looking and we are almost over. We don't have a lot of time. So I'm going to move to advocacy. What ways and how do you advocate for youth in foster care? And I'll start with you, Christopher, and move on.
Well, us the youth advocate in a variety of ways.
Okay.
Currently, as it is, we are all in Tallahassee,
mm-hmm.
speaking with members of the Florida Congress, the Senate, and the House, in order to hopefully sway some of their positions on a few bills, which are in everyone's best interest, actually. Mm-hmm. Of note, for example, we want to implement a form of rating system in order to get the group homes I mentioned earlier at roughly the equal level by examining them and where they're strong, where they're weak. And we'd also like to implement legislature that makes it so that when youths are taken into the system, they're not put directly into a group home, that they're ideally put into a placement that is as similar to traditional family unit as possible, because as it is, they're primarily going into group homes because it's an easy placement. Now, but besides speaking with legislators, I myself, as well as with three other youth of Florida Youth Shine from my chapter, we held a panel where we spoke in front of a group of caseworkers, lawyers, multiple types of folk, all from the same field,
mm-hmm.
and spoke about our experiences. We related them. We gave them some firsthand knowledge of what it is like to be in the system and where it needs to be fixed.
How have you been received, Jessica? I mean, I'm talking about the legislators mm-hmm. now. I mean, how are they receiving? Do you feel like they're listening? Just share with us.
Yes, I would say, like, 99% of the time, it's definitely well-received and extremely positive feedback. I think they're really just, especially with how many new people there are this year in the Congress and the legislative, but mm-hmm. They want to hear our stories. They want to know what's happening, and they want to know ways to fix it. I think sometimes the biggest problem is just that they just don't know about foster care. A lot of the time, they don't work in that field, and they've never had to work in that field. So it is a little bit of trying to teach them about the knowledge, about just the basic thing, like what a child-based care is, or, you know, what a provider is, or what a group home is.
What do you say? What do you say, Phil?
I usually just tell them the providers are the ones that kind of make sure that there's places for us to stay. There's making sure that the group homes are there at the end of the day and that the foster homes are there, and making sure that there's case managers, enough of them anyway, to take all of us. And it's usually well received. I think they really do hear our stories. And sometimes, you know, a lot of people, not them, but don't exactly listen, but they actually do listen, and they come up with suggestions, and they're willing to, you know, give us their personal number, or give them, like, one person was able to get a job with the Department of Agriculture, and one person was able to get a internship with them. So there's just so many things of just them listening to us that I think most of the time is just extremely amazing and powerful how much they actually listen to us.
Well, I applaud all of you and your comrades that aren't here today, those that I saw on Sunday, because, you know, just being out there, even though you're eager to do it, is all can also be somewhat overwhelming or unsettling. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
Elaborate. How do you get over that hump?
You know, me personally, as stated, I always put myself out there in the forefront, you mm-hmm. know, and I always, you know, take the bullets, you know, for my youth, if you will, my brothers and sisters in the foster care system. Mm-hmm. And if I would, you know, I don't want to change the subject, but before I do forget and before we do run out of time, I would like to thank Florida Children's First, because they were the ones who definitely founded Florida Youth Shine. And had there not been a Florida Children's First, there would be no Florida Youth Shine. Okay. And, you know, and they are the ones that definitely, they're like the potters, you know. They definitely help shape, mold, and sculpt us to be the amazing advocates that we are. They prep Absolutely. Us for everything that we need. So when we go out, we don't look very unorganized or whatever the case may be. We come there full force, and we are polished, and we are well-mannered with pure professionalism, and we go there, and we get the job done.
Well, they certainly know? Are doing
yes,
the job.
Yes, they have. You know,
I got to say,
right.
You are a good spokesperson.
Thank you.
Okay,
you know.
They are very proud to have you around.
Right.
Okay? Do you feel, and I'm going to just kind of jump around, but what changes would you recommend, Logan, to the system overall? What changes would you identify now? Okay, I know they've made some inroads and some things have changed, and that's great, and I applaud you all on that. But as you sit back and you see, and, you know, you're getting ready, I would think, to be transitioning out, what do you see as some of the major issues that continue with being in, you know, youth care?
Well, as a matter of fact, we've actually been cooking up a bill for the past couple of months now as a form of rating system for these group homes and these foster
homes.
That's
what Chris...
Yes, mentioning what Chris was referring to earlier. And that's because in group homes and other state care all over Florida, the quality of care is wildly variable. It is as inconsistent as it gets, because all of the private contractors that own these group homes and the people that operate these foster homes, they all operate on their own rules. And what that introduces...
So there's no consistency.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay. Different strokes for different folks.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Say, for example, Chris's home, as he said, it operates on like a different disciplinarian schedule than mine does, so to speak. Like,
that's
our homes vary.
Question.
Our homes vary as much as they could. And this bill, what it aims to do is it aims to standardize the quality of care that we get in these houses to ensure that kids entering the system, leaving the system, doesn't matter. It ensures that they will get the same quality of care as any other kid in the state of Florida.
May I add something?
Sure.
As far as implementations we need to make into the system to fix it, I believe one of the most important things we can do is ensure that the youths know their rights.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Because,
mm-hmm. Okay.
Because our group, we've been operating for a while now, and I believe that we have made some very important changes. And there are youths that have no idea that any of these movements have been made. And if I haven't mentioned before, when you enter the foster care system, you are not told your rights. If you're arrested by national law, you have to be told your rights as someone who has been convicted of a crime.
Right.
But as a foster care youth, you are not entitled to this. You are not told that you have a right to go to your hearings.
So you don't have the same liberties as other kids?
We have many of these liberties, but many of them are completely unaware of them. Many do, many do not learn of all the rights they are entitled to until they are leaving care, and then they feel like, I felt like an idiot until just about recently. Just a huge dummy. Because until you find groups like Florida Youth Shine, you don't realize exactly how much is out there.
Yeah,
or alternatively, until you get a... Or many youths don't find out until they receive a life coach. But that's, later in the... that's later in the cycle of the foster care system. That is, most of them will only find out these things until they're around 17, 18. And so many will spend, years never going to their hearings or never being part of their case plan.
Yeah.
Do they have case managers? How does that work? But these case managers don't inform you? Obviously, they must not. I guess I've answered my own question.
Well, I can speak on that, being in the field, picking this as my profession, being passionate about it, working with the independent living program that is for the 13 to 20-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that case managers, I can't speak for all. I can only speak for myself.
Right, I know that.
And when you have the passion to work with youth, you want to make sure they understand their rights, understand that they have the ability to speak up. And these youth, let me tell you, especially these four here, they are resilient. And I have the opportunity to work with them, and being a part of Florida Youth Shine as a mentor has been just the best opportunity in my career, I can say. I can vouch for that.
If I may add something to the audience who may not be familiar with the terminology we're using here. A case manager is essentially the legal guardian of the youth in question, but they're not the caregiver. I would liken this to a manager for, say, an artist. They are legally tied to their performance and their success and everything and all of their affairs. And you would liken the homes that they live into, for example, a venue of sort. And as it is, there is a system currently in place where the case managers work under CBCs or community-based care corporations, and when a youth enters care, they're then put into the custody of the CBC and therefore the case manager. And then between this, they live somewhere possibly in a completely different district entirely. Depends on what the case manager has to do. Now, my group home is fortunately doesn't follow this system. We have our own case managers on site, so they're always present. And besides this, they also have a far lower caseload. However, though,
that
with many...
That makes a big difference.
Very, very, very big difference. Because prior to this, this only recently happened in my group home. When I was first taken into this group home, the system was not yet implemented. I had a case manager who was working with a CBC, whom I saw once a month.
Mm.
And I only had that one day every month in order to explain any pleas, any grievances.
And how long did you get to spend with the case manager?
Roughly an hour. Because
To report for what has happened over a month's time.
And this is also, and also consider this fact, this case manager also has more youths to go. This case manager, I believe the caseload at this time was often nearly 60 youths. I remember it was definitely far higher than it should have been. It was so much so that often they'd have to make a trip every work day in order to see youth, and it was just nonstop. And so they had to constantly listen, but had very little time to process the needs of these youth and really focus on one. Go ahead.
Yeah.
All right. So to kind of backtrack back to why we are here in Tallahassee.
Yes.
So they, everyone mentioned that, one of the things that we are focusing on is trying to implement a quality rating system for the group homes.
Right.
And I believe another major key, another major bill that we are trying to pass is, we're focusing on sibling separation, because that is most definitely very, very vital for when you are removed from your home. You know, nine times out of ten, when you are removed from your home, since there are so many, there are limited placements, you know, you might have one placement here in this group home, but you might have one placement here in a foster home. So, you know, instead of, you know, trying to sit there and wait for that child, you know, so what the moral of the story, what they would try to do is just split up the kids, you know, and then, you know, with there being level systems in group homes, you know, you won't be able to, you know, communicate, because in some group homes, you have to be quote unquote a level six, you know, to be able to use a cell phone. But when you first go into a group home, you're not at a level six. Exactly. So. You start as a level zero. So you have to wait your 2 weeks for them to monitor your behavior. So if you do the math, that's approximately 3 months. You know,
that
3 months
that you,
exactly.
Contact.
So just imagine, you know, and then that's majority of why the kids start to act out, because they don't have that support system.
Oh, they aren't just bad kids?
Right. Of course, we are never just bad kids, because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, before we are foster children, if you take away the foster, we are still children.
That's right.
You know, and I believe that is what gets
that's
so misconstrued.
Very important.
You know, and I think that's what
that
gets true enough, you know.
I mean, yeah.
And literally, and I feel like that's why I'm so passionate about it, because, you know, with me being, some would say that I was troubled or whatever, and I don't think that I was troubled at all. If you ask me, I was on the same exact page as everyone else.
We gotta close. Mm-hmm. I've got the time, and I want to say thank you. I mean, I really want to extend my appreciation for your sharing your stories and what you all are about. And you have to come back. And to my listening audience, I say thank you for your time and your ear. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. This edition of 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistant, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Team podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.